Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Wait a minute. Wait a minute. You ain't heard nothing yet.
Houston, we have a problem.
They're here.
Stop, children. What's that sound? Everybody look what's going down.
Hey, everybody. This is Woody Massey, producer of the Jimmy Delaval Brooklyn Buddha podcast. A couple dates get out of the way. Jimmy will be at the Brea Improv June 10th. Sharing the stage with Keith Reza, I believe. And that's going to be a great show. Head out if you're in the area. June 12th through the 14th, Jimmy will be headlining at the Edgewater Casino in Laughlin, Nevada. So make a weekend of it, folks. Pile the wife into the car. Lose a couple grand playing back blackjack. And then laugh away the pain. Today on the show, we had Joe Barnes. Joe, a veteran cameraman, worked on a bunch of different projects here in Hollywood in the film industry, and it was nice hearing his perspective on, you know, movies and how they're filmed, what it's like on set, and he has some crazy stories. The guy has been in the business for a while, stretching from New York to L.A., and James Cameron may or may not be involved in some of the stories. I don't want to ruin it for you, but and he also had a great, possibly one of the best backhanded one-liners to the Mark Hamill, Luke Skywalker himself, that you will ever hear. So, folks, you're in for a treat. Joe turned out to be a great guest, and, well, I'm going to stop gabbing on, and let's listen to what Joe had to say. Y'all have a great day.
Brooklyn Buddha. So, you know, I haven't had many of these guys in the industry. He's a director, and I'm actually going to be doing a film with him, and Tim is as well. Tim snuck his ass into the film, and it's the zombie genre. We're not going to talk any more about that because it's confidential at this point. But anyways, he was a kid actor, and his whole family is actors, and they've all worked. And his brother is a top acting agent, so it's like the whole family. And then the sister works at Disney. I mean, just the list goes on and on for this guy.
The dog.
Yeah, the dog.
It's a family full of top men.
That's Tim Tim Homeo talking right
How
there.
How you doing?
And, of course, Woody. These guys all wanted coffee this time. I don't know what that's about. They all wanted black coffee like they like their women.
Yes.
Yeah.
And Tim, proud of it.
Tim didn't say.
It's Mexican coffee.
It is Mexican? What, because it's Cinco de Mayo? Are we pretending we're doing this on Cinco de Mayo?
Well, I had a little Cinco de Mayo celebration.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, it was a good time.
So, you got yourself a Mexican girl?
I've dated a few Mexican girls
before. No, but last night.
Last night, no.
You celebrate with your two
Still
hands?
Still in my epic dry streak right now.
Okay, good, good. So, without further ado, I want to bring on actor, writer, director, cinematographer, who's worked with the great James Cameron, as well as he just did the TV show with Patrick Stewart. I mean, so the list of credits, the one and only... My friend, Joe Barnes.
Hola. Okay. Cinco de Mayo, right?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
It started right off with the racist. Hola. He doesn't say hola. He says hola.
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 All right. So anyways, so Joe, this is your first interview ever in your whole career.
It is, of this fashion. Yes.
That's fucking insane.
It is. I've been interviewed in behind the scenes things, but it's always like, two quick questions and see you later, and they go off to the more important.
You didn't know you'd be here for an hour and a half.
No.
You had to quit your day job just to do this interview.
I walked away from some
sick
big
pay.
Deals.
Sick pay. So good. So I wanted you on here because, of course, we're working together, but you're an interesting character. We met playing poker. Tell my fans, we're all poker players except for Tim, sucks, and Woody, I think, plays Monopoly. He plays Monopoly.
High stakes Monopoly, but I always Monopoly. Have to quit halfway through. I get really nasty. I become like a slumlord. Like, get the fuck out. I don't care. I'm building bigger property. Like, it's terrible.
It gets a little crazy.
Yeah. I heard you were a war player.
War?
Oh, yeah. I'll do a marathon. Those games never end.
Remember when they were on Seinfeld? Newman and Kramer were playing Risk on the subway.
Nice.
On the subway.
A few extra pieces there.
It was so fucking funny. So you started, you're from California. That's
rare.
Yeah,
born and raised, yep.
And your father is a character actor.
Well, my father, because I have two. rare to have two fathers. Father, but father? I have two fathers. One passed away 20 so years ago. And my current stepfather, he is an actor and
Phil,
producer.
The guy
Phil.
I know.
Yeah,
Phil.
Senor Brown, we call him on Cinco de Mayo.
Yeah.
yeah, so my father, my biological father, was born in southern Illinois in a town called Coulterville. Probably 500 people to this day live there. Wow. He left as soon as he turned 18 and joined the Air Force. He enjoyed the arts. He started making puppets at a young age. So he was a puppeteer and a choreographer. He did a couple musicals and did some puppet things. He did the show called Dusty's Treehouse here in L.A., local deal on CBS, which went for a lot of years. Did some work for Sid and Marty Krofft. And literally on his deathbed, Henson contacted him to work with him.
Right.
Which is funny because my dad's puppet style was very Muppet-esque before there were a Muppet. So it's kind of a weird turn of events. But, you know, it was, he had a fun
So you're saying Jim Henson might have taken a little bit of your dad's creativeness.
It could have happened.
That's exciting. That's exciting.
I actually did puppet shows with my dad. I operated on a marionette and things like that at Sears. They used to have shows on the holidays where they'd have a little showcase and, you know, to bring people in to watch the puppets and little, you know, variety acts, so they'd shop at Sears.
The first time I ever saw, like, marionettes and all that was in Italy. We were, like, walking through the courtyard.
That's the home of Pinocchio.
Yeah, I know. And we were walking through, and they had, like, all right, you know, and they are throwing together a show right there on the street with, like, a curtain. The guy's holding the curtain. The other one's coming through. And I was like, holy shit. That's an amazing art. I really like it. I think that whole puppetry.
It's the character thing. It's similar to acting because you have to create characters for all your puppets. And his favorite was Punch and Judy. That was his favorite act to do because he put a spin on it. And it was really funny. It was kid-friendly.
Oh, cool.
Because Punch and Judy, the real story, is pretty violent.
Well, think of Punch and Judy. What about Puppetry of the Penis?
That's a good one. I've
Have you seen it?
That, I often tie strings to my penis.
Did you ever do... I opened for Puppetry of the Penis in Philadelphia.
Did you?
It was like a $500 gig.
Nice.
And standing room only thing. You know, I mean, it's an amazing, like, it was before it was on Broadway, and we did it, and these guys were, like, amazing. We're there. You know what I mean? I can only do the hamburger.
Nice.
I can, and that's just the way my balls
look. I tried
look.
The pretzel. That just didn't work.
I would assume what he's trying.
You could do a bullfrog.
Nice.
Have you? I got a bullfrog.
The women weren't as good, so they just did monologues.
Budweiser. It's fucking penis. Good. So, I'm excited to have you on here,
man.
Thanks for having me. You know, I was telling these guys about your story of the great James Cameron you worked with on the famous...
Terminator 2 3D Battle Across Time for Universal Studios. It was the ride they put in Florida and also here in L.A. after that.
And that was... it was like shooting a movie for
it's
that.
It's actually probably bigger in a lot of ways.
What was the budget 3D on that?
No idea, because they don't share those numbers with me.
Right.
But it was a big undertaking. It was 3D. 3D was not existent at that point. And it was a new technology with the polarization of lenses and not the typical, you know, red and blue glasses. So the cameras were as big as Volkswagen Bugs, and it was a big production. Stan Winston was there, you know, working with the costumes and things like that. It was intense. A lot of green screen stuff, but we were in Blythe. That was the big part. In the middle of the night in summer, and
Blythe, Arizona.
Yeah, well, it's actually California. It's
California.
It's close to the border. No, though, I know. Where it I remember is. On our one day off, everyone kind of hit up Arizona, and some people went to Vegas, and I'm trying to remember the other town, the gambling town outside of
Laughlin.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, I've been there once.
Yeah, no, I'm performing there. June 12th, 13th, 14th at the Edgewater Casino.
So Edgewater. That's it.
And then I'm going to Arizona to the Pine Top, Arizona to the Honda Casino. But anyways.
Well, it is amazing how people don't realize, like Joe said, how big those rides are and attractions at the like Universal. And they're humongous undertakings.
It's a huge undertaking because it's interactive. It's an interactive show as far as, you know, there's live action with the film. It was 3D and actors also shot out of the screen and explosions and robotics and things
Did
like
he
that.
Write it?
I'm sure he did. I'm sure he was a big...
he's a big part of all any project he does.
Yeah. Everything he does. Jim Cameron is an intense guy. Very focused, very driven.
What was it like working with him? I think you told me when we were just hanging, and I want you to tell my audience, and they probably won't know the movie, but tell them what broke the ice, because James Cameron is an amazing person to work with, but he's very, very strict in his ways, and he handles his business. But so Joe, a new kid on the block.
Yeah. Young
kid.
Strapping.
Yeah.
Thinner. You know, Jim's a very intense guy. A lot of people maybe think he's a jerk or an a-hole, but I'll tell you what, in fact, he could be, and he is. But here's the thing about him. He's working harder than anybody on the set. He knows what he wants, and he's getting dirty, more so than most people. He's not a pointing director. He doesn't point and say, go do that, go do this.
Right.
He gets in there and does it. Very intense. Doesn't have any room for BS. If something goes wrong, he doesn't want you to walk up and have a list of excuses of why it didn't work. He just wants to know that it'll never happen again. And I learned that through watching people get their heads bit off. So going through Blythe, we were there for, I believe it was three and a half weeks, working nights, 100 degrees, Kaiser Steel Mill, toxic waste dump. Basically, they shut it down because of environmental reasons. It was hard and ugly and not a lot of room for mistakes and things like that. So essentially, we went through that together, and the whole time, I was his video assist guy at the time, so I was able to work right next to him, which was really cool because it's an education, you know, and it was an experience I'll never forget. It's kind of like going to war, and when you come out of it, you're a different person. Well, I think it definitely, I grew huge with that experience, and he didn't like me much at the beginning. I was more of a pain in the ass. I performed a service he needed, but he constantly reminded me of what a dumbass I was, which was something...
You're like, my wife does that. Right. I don't need...
Yeah, at first, it was belittling. In fact, a lot of people were going to leave and, you know, couldn't really deal, because not only are you exhausted and you're hot and you're pissed off because you're breathing iron ore dust and things like that, but then you have that factor, and it was not easy. But we got back to L.A., which was probably the best day of my life, leaving Blythe. I should go a little side note on Blythe. We stayed in a hotel. I'm not going to mention names because I don't want you to get sued. But stayed in a hotel, and you're working these nights, and you want to take a shower. And you go in, and you just want to get the iron ore dust off you and the diesel fuel from the bombs and everything else. And you turn the shower off on, and the water comes out tan, which
wow.
is kind of an experience. So you call the front desk, and they explain that they're cleaning the pipes out in Blythe. So
wow.
That's just how it is. But don't worry, it's only dirt. So we were given that luxury of showering in dirty water.
So after a few minutes, it didn't go
clean? No, it stayed.
Wow.
After a few, almost, by the time we left, it was almost clear. And I thought it was a bunch of BS, so I actually called
another
hotel.
And you've been
running
it the whole time, for the whole...
Yeah, it was. We tried everything.
Wow.
You know, what I'm getting at is it was really a hard job, physically, emotionally. It's literally like going to war, like I said. So there's a lot of stuff piling up. So anyway.
But that experience, you will never forget.
No, I'll never
and
forget.
You,
I'll never regret
it. And it made you a better...
Oh, yeah.
A better
the things
cinematographer.
Absolutely.
All these things that you learn.
Yep, absolutely. It was something you couldn't pay for. You
well,
couldn't go to
tell them what broke the
yes,
ice, because Woody's probably going to get hard over it.
So we get back to L.A. I think it was Bryn Mawr, if I remember right. We were doing some green screen stuff, and everyone's pretty happy because we're out of Blythe, and the mood is up. You know, Jim's still Jim and frustrated.
James Cameron.
Right. By the way, I should mention I have the utmost respect for the guy because he is extremely talented, as everyone probably knows who's listening.
Of course,
but,
of course.
So, you know, we're sitting there and Arnold Schwarzenegger's doing his deal. Everyone's doing their deal and it's intense and it's loud. And Mark Hamill shows up from next door, another soundstage, and he's talking to Jim. And one of the beauties of being a video assist guy is you're next to the director all the time. That's your job, is to play back everything that's been shot because they're shooting film. Obviously, you can't wait for dailies the next day.
Mm-hmm.
So you do a lot of playback and things like that. So I was right next to him the whole time, which is great and bad. But anyway, Mark Hamill shows up.
Well, let me tell my audience, because they're too young, they might not know.
It's Luke Skywalker.
Yeah, but
everyone knows who Mark Hamill is.
No, bullshit. How much you want to bet?
Oh, Ben.
How can you bet?
Guaranteed. I guarantee I could walk up to 50 people, and I bet you only maybe 20 people know who he is. I've done.
That's really high, though, for a movie.
From the 70s.
That's really high.
Yeah, but regardless, people don't know.
They
people
know Luke, don't know. But they,
might know, they know who Luke Skywalker is. He is the first Luke Skywalker.
He's
I want
giant
you to,
headed yep, man.
You know,
he's in the new movie, too.
So he goes from Luke Skywalker to this movie, okay. Corvette Summer.
Okay, so this is what happens. So he comes in, and he's talking to Jim, and I'm just listening, and I'm a huge fan of Star Wars. In fact, in 1977, it's one of the reasons I wanted to make movies. I was 11 years old, and most of my friends... You know, I want to be a fireman, I want to be a cop, I want to be a doctor, I want to be a lawyer, but I saw that movie and I knew I wanted to get in the industry. In fact, what I really want to do is build models and blow them up, but that's changed into cinematography some weird way. But anyhow, he comes on the stage and they're talking, I'm just listening, freaking out, because there's Mark Hamill and Jim Cameron having a conversation. Mark Hamill is doing Wing Commander 5 next door, which was a video game, and they used to shoot people in ping pong suits and kind of do this whole CG thing, early stages of that. So he had left. And I go to Jim, and I say, God damn, Jim, I loved him in Corvette Summer. Well, as a reference, Corvette Summer is probably, and no offense to anybody involved, but one of
horrendous.
The worst movies
the
ever
worst
made.
Movie.
And it was just a little shitty thing for me to say, but unknowingly at the time, Jim really appreciates a dark sense of humor. So, he came up to me and said, you're cold fucking blooded, man. And I was like, oh shit, I'm gonna yell that again. He's like, I like you. And that was it. From that moment on, Jim and I got along great. Flash forward to the
great. See, I told you.
It's funny, but
that's why I wanted that story.
It was fun. We became pals, and not pals, like we don't go out drinking together, but at least I wasn't getting yelled at anymore, which was actually really cool. So at the wrap party, where they're actually showing the 3D film, which was intense as well, we're all sitting there. I'm with my wife, who ex-wife now, but 8.5 months pregnant, really big, sitting at the table, just her and I. Jim walks in. You know, he has the entourage with a bunch of dudes in suits from Universal and wherever else. And Jim comes over and sits at our table and starts talking to us about the baby and just life stuff for, it felt like 45 minutes. It could have been 5, but it was a long time. And one thing I remember is looking around that room and looking at all the suits, checking their watches, and they all know better than to go up to Jim and say, hey, Jim, come on over here, meet so-and-so. They know not to do that because he will flip out and not appreciate that. So he literally shot the shit with us for a long time, 40-ish minutes, just talking about life and kids and everything else. And it was really kind of a cool feeling to know that he came to a crew guy, a video assist guy, you know, at the time. You know, I'm not a big baller or anything like that or famous, but it was kind of cool that he just cared enough to kind of chill with us, and that was a cool experience. And
what was this, the mid-90s?
Yeah, it was the middle-late 90s. I think it was 96, 97. 96, 97.
So it's like it shows the human side of him that, he can be harsh, but once it's done, he can...
Right. He's a super passionate guy, and I know a lot of people... maybe don't appreciate that style, and I get it because it is intense. I mean, but you have to remember that his head's going in a million directions, and he's, you know, one thing about him is he knows everything. He does. He might not be your favorite director or anything like that, but if there's any bit of technology, he knows about it before other people do. That's kind of a weird thing, and if it comes out, he'll study it. He's an editor. He knows the Avid system. He knows everything there is about effects. I mean, he's a great
That's amazing.
Man, you know.
Was he dating or was he married to... the Oscar winner, the one who did Hurt Locker at that point?
You know, no, they actually...
What's her name? I'm so sorry.
I don't remember Catherine right now.
Look at that. Tim,
right.
Tim never knows
nice
nothing.
Pull, Tim.
And every once in a while, he's got
I
something.
Try to, I try not to
Captain Bigelow.
But what was cool about the whole thing is if my wife wasn't 8.5 months pregnant, I totally probably would have gotten laid that night because it was intense. You know,
so that was great.
Hanging out with us. But yeah, it was a good experience. It was really cool. Flash forward a little bit if you wanted this little side note.
Yeah, I want the side note.
I don't know. Several months later, a few months later, I got a call to do the Titanic with Jim in Mexico as a video.
Was that straight to DVD? Never heard of it.
Yeah, it's a little.
The biggest
movie
of that movie sank. Tim, very funny.
Tim shows up with the pull. You know, and here I have this little kid now who was born Austin, and
19 years later. Now he's 19 now?
97 now, right? So it was 1997. I get the call and for Video Assist on a boat that they made in Mexico. the guy on the phone, I don't remember his name right now, said, oh, it's 6 months, you know, it's Jim, it's in Mexico, we really like you to do it. And I was, first of all, really flattered and happy and excited.
You're getting the offer to be on Titanic. I want my audience to know, you're being offered to work right next to James Cameron,
yeah,
the director of Titanic, to sit on this boat for 6 months, which is a long time because your wife is pregnant. This is a conflict, a situation that doesn't come up every day, and you're like, I love my wife. Is she the one? Should I stay with her? You know, right, because if not, you're going to probably, you know, some women wouldn't wait.
Right.
She might fuck Mark Hamill. That's you don't right. know what happens, right?
Probably could have after that.
Right.
So, you know, it was that moment of, you know, joy of like, oh, heck yeah, you know, this is a money cow, because there's also danger pay, you know, involved when you go on a sinking boat. And also the union rate and everything was really cool. So I did the quick math, and I'm like, this would really be a life-changing financial deal for us. So I told them I need a day, you know, to put it together. And so I did the math, and I call it the gym math. But I know that 6 months is a year, and it was 6 days a week. And it's really hard to go from Mexico to L.A. in one day and then mm-hmm. come back and work another 6 days straight for, by the way, at least 16-hour days, I'm
right.
sure.
Right, minimum.
So, you know, it is a cash cow. But then I believe my son was born. I think he was probably a month old at that time, maybe 2 months. But I looked over and I just did the math as far as what's really important. And, you know, I would have missed a lot of things. I would have missed, you know, the first steps, the first meal, just being a part of that early stages. And this was my first son. So
that's
kind
your
of a
first
big deal. Yeah.
Maybe if he's second or third,
yeah,
fuck it.
I'm out.
Keep it moving.
So, you know, I made that decision. I called them back and they were, you know, perplexed, and obviously I haven't got a call for Avatar or anything else, so I think
right.
I sent the message, but I still to this day feel I did the right thing by
yeah.
turning it down, because I was there for Austin, and it was really a great experience for me. He won't remember any of it, but I will, and I
right.
got 385 hours of video of him eating and doing things. I actually gave him a lemon once just to get the reaction.
Right.
So that was kind of fun.
That's fun.
You know, it was really good, and I don't regret the decision. I think it was the right one to do.
Well, it actually makes me respect you more as a person.
Oh, thanks.
To show loyalty. Me being Italian and my loyalty towards friends and family. You know, I mean, I'm completely, everybody knows me, 150% dedicated to my career. But my loyalty lies within my friends and family all
great,
the time.
Yeah.
And, you know, and Tim being my best friend, I mean, I can be bossy and say, hey, Tim, do this, this, you know, hey, like sometimes not ask him, you know, not ask him, just tell him, hey, man, I need a ride from the airport. But he, you know, it's the same thing. And then, but I'll say thank you and that. But it's like.
Yeah, but you take a bullet for him, right?
Of course.
There you go. So that's the payout.
You know,
so, Tim, next
actually,
time
he'd run away.
He's
got a gun.
No, true story. Tim, who is like the calmest, relaxing, where was it, Cinco de Mayo? In fact, this might have been Cinco de Mayo that
yeah,
we were in Malibu. Malibu?
Just a few
or no, Marina Del Rey. And this girl was like all over me. She was a bar waitress that she holds the drinks.
Shot girl.
And she's all over me. It's Tim, my buddy Chadio, and this kid Amin. And she's like over, and she's like taking her shirt. She's opening her shirt, and I'm going, what the fuck? And all of a sudden, she goes, psh, and she slaps me. And I'm like, what the fuck is that? She's like, you want some of these? You have to take the pain or something. She smacks me again, and Tim grabs her by the hair. That's enough! And he throws her down. Like, he's my bouncer. It was
awesome.
Like, I'm like, that's my best friend right there.
Oh, that's amazing.
It was just great. Because you never see him step up, boom, and then he's like,
want me, you
get off. You know, but I didn't want her. I don't even drink. She's
right.
just standing in front of me, and they're drunk. I don't know if you know. They hired these horror shot girl waitresses, like in there.
Sometimes, not every.
Well, not every
shot
place.
Girl's a whore.
Yeah, yeah, not every shot girl. For the shot girls, no disrespect, right? The ones that have made great choices in life to be shot girls.
Right.
They went got master's degree in shot making. Anyways.
Well, that could just be their nighttime gig. They're probably attorneys.
Well, no, yeah. So what they do is they hire them, and then they have to, they walk around like Venice Beach and all this stuff. And they don't work for the restaurant. They just come in with their shots. maybe they have to give a piece to the restaurant. I don't know how it is, but they are not part of the thing. So she was really drunk. Yeah.
Right. Like, so she's doing her own shots.
Stripper with drinks. I mean, of course. So anyways.
Wait, in hindsight, I mean, you could look at it as far as the, you know, you worked on T2.
3D Battlecross.
And that was kind of rough with Cameron. You know,
yeah, but again, it was. But I'll tell you what, I have the most respect for that guy because I got him. You know, it's weird. A lot of people don't. And I was brought up in a really loving, caring family. You know, never verbally abused or emotionally abused in any way. But for some reason, I still kind of related to him because he doesn't have room for incompetence. It's like it's a machine, and he understands that.
And yeah, not only
If you're incompetent, they have a pill, right? Oh no,
I think so.
That's impotent. That's
you. See Alice.
That's Tim.
Viagra.
As George Wallace says, I'll be seeing Alice. I'll be seeing Michelle. Love you, George.
Coming to get me.
So he was not only like hands on, but he was also, like you said, he's like a trendsetter. So he's thinking in the future. This is gonna, you know.
Oh yeah.
But in hindsight, also the good aspect, you know, how tough it could be. From what you worked with them, imagine working with them on a boat.
Right.
That's got to be tough for.
You know what? I felt okay about it only because of what had happened towards the end of our deal with T2, where we bonded with the Mark Hamill dig, and I was okay with that part because you know, it's funny. You kind of just have to not take it personally, and like with, I tell my son this. He's now a camera assistant, but everywhere you go. If you're a fireman, a cop, a doctor, everywhere you go, there's going to be that guy. And show business, it's even more so because it's a very passionate business. And when you get creative folks together and egos and things like that, people say a lot of things and frustration and things like that. But if you take it personally, you'll never go anywhere. You'll just curl up into a ball. You have to understand that those are the same people that are going to, you know, take you out for drinks after or at the rap party. You know, they forget about it and it's not a big deal. But at that moment that gets heated, you just have to understand that that's just part of the process sometimes. You know, I'm not saying that's the way I work, but people that do work that way, it's, you know, it's, they don't mean it in that, in a mean-spirited way, but at that moment, it feels like everything, you know what I mean? So
yeah, it sounds like similar, like Steve Jobs. I've heard similar stories. He's very intelligent, that's, very focused, very trend-setting, but at the same time could be harsh if
so,
get on the wrong side.
Exactly.
So what I want to ask you is about your whole family, your father, Phil, Senor Brown,
Brown.
So him, the other guy that plays poker with us, is Phillip. He not? He's a handsome guy. He does. Yeah. He's not an actor?
Philip?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's an actor.
Oh, he is. The, like, older...
He was on the Doris Day show. He was a kid in the Doris Day show. Oh, okay. Really talented guy.
But is he still acting, or is he does something
now? He does commercials and things like that now.
Does he do another, like, a day job type thing?
I don't really think he has. He did Sunset Beach for a while.
No, he's a very handsome,
very talented. He's actually an extremely talented actor.
Great guy.
Yeah.
Nice guy. So, there's you. You guys are running around as little kids, and you're in Hollywood. Well, you're not in Hollywood. You're Valley, or where were you?
Well, we grew up in Toluca Lake, Burbank area.
Okay, so right there.
Yep. And
so your first acting gig, you got your SAG card as a little boy?
When I think I was about 3 days old, I got my SAG card. Yeah. I applied, and the Social Security card was kind of an issue because that hadn't been given to me yet. But you know, it's funny how that started. My parents were members of a theater group called the Company Theater, which was really a cool kind of environment to grow in with. It was grow up with. You know, that 60s era live theater deal.
You do a scene and then you fuck after. I know.
Right. Smoke a bunch of weed.
Charles Manson would come sitting in front.
He had his own seat. It was kind of neat. It was a bunch of talented people who got together and produced plays. And I was the young kid. And so whenever they needed a kid in one of their plays, I was that guy. So
learn as you go. No acting classes. Learn as you go. Throw you in.
Yeah.
Let's get little Joe.
Yeah, he'll do it. He'll stand there with a gun.
Right.
But it was great. It was a different era, you know. It was something that it was all about creative. The money literally went to paying the rent for the theaters. No one was getting rich off it, but everyone was doing what they love, which is, you know, what I tell my son all the time is do what you love. Money comes and goes, but you don't get the time back. So, you know, you do have to pay rent, mortgage, car payments, etc. But, you know, you have to do what you love or you'll just have a shitty life.
Right, completely. And like, once again, one thing more that makes me respect you so much, you know. So another thing is, so you're in this whole family thing. Were there any stars that were there in this theater that went on to do anything? Or did you end up in acting classes after that? Like, hey, I kind of like this.
I'll tell you
or I want to be behind the camera with your view. Viewmaster, you're like, I'm gonna make movies.
I don't want to bore the audience with this quick story, but
no, I think the audience likes it. Wait 1 second, Woody. I think the audience is in.
Oh, they love.
They love stories.
They love stories.
That's the whole point of podcast.
Yeah, yeah. I want to hear.
Okay.
It's a behind the scenes of behind the scenes. Yeah. Behind the scenes.
Behind. It's behind. The man who was behind Jim Cameron, James Cameron, for T2.
T2 3D Battlecross Time is the big difference.
T2 Battlecross Time.
Might be cooler.
Yeah. Okay. Stan Winston was cool working with that dude. He's passed since, but that was really fun too. But anyway, quick story. I'm 11 years old, and same time as Star Wars actually came out. But I was doing a play called King Lear, and it was a hippy-dippy rendition. It wasn't, you know, Shakespearean, like, to the point.
George Carlin wrote it.
Put some twists on that.
Hippy-dippy.
Right? And, there are some twists. So at the end of the play, what happens is King Lear is trying to re-enter his kingdom. He's had his eyeballs sucked out of his head. He's been tortured and beat to shit. But his whole deal is he wants to get back to being the king. So he's pounding on the doors of the kingdom. And my job is I'm a militant guard at 11. I told you it's hippy-dippy, right?
Right.
So my job is to assassinate King Lear because he's a pain in the ass and he's beating on the doors. So I'm sent out with a gun to take him out, and then he dies, and then the play ends. So I go up, here I enter the set, he's kind of, let me in, he's, you know, fucked up, his eyeballs are sucked out of his head, he's wearing this weird fucking contraption on his head, I'll never forget it, because that was the device that sucked his eyeball out, and I have a prop gun, and I go to shoot, and it's click, and it's click, and it's click, and in my head, at a million miles an hour, I'm thinking, the fucking gun is, I said fucking when I was 11, what the fuck, I gotta kill this guy so this play can end so I can get the fuck out of here, because right now I'm freaking out. And I know a lot of actors, that's the moment, man, we all live for
it. Yeah,
it's cool, I dig it, but it fucking sucked at a
right
lot, because I felt responsible to my rights, an audience of, it's a small theater, 100 people or so, maybe 150, but I'm still thinking I have to end this fucking play. So I'm like, alright, kill the guy, guns click click click, I'm like, all right. So I run up the set, which was built by hippies, so you can imagine any moment it's going to fall on you.
Right, right.
So, and when I say built by hippies, they're all loving, nice people and supported me going up. So
we don't want to disrespect the hippie foundation. Meanwhile, I'm actually going to San Francisco. I have shows this weekend at Cobb's Comedy Club.
Don't
May
10th
and May 12th, Throckmorton Theater. Anyways.
Just whatever you do, don't eat the brown acid while you're there. So I go up to beat him with the gun. I'm using the gun as a weapon and
mafia style. Right. You turn it around. Yeah. I'm a little kid, I'm turning it around fucking right. Goodfellas on his ass. King Lear. King Lear was hit with the back of a gun.
It was fun.
But was this like a gun with like a musket
it was,
and shit?
No, that's the thing. It was a little revolver. It was like a .38 special.
Oh,
and
wow.
So I'm up there and I'm beating him, and of course he's the actor that played Lear was knowing exactly what's going on and aware, and so he's going, oh, ah, ooh, and he's like falling down the fucking stairs. I almost knocked him out for sure because I'm, you know, in a panic at 11.
You don't have combat, stage combat training
right,
at this
that.
Point.
You really so,
you've only hit up little Billy who stole your lunch money too many times.
So,
did the exact same thing, pissed him up the shit out of little Billy.
I did, you know. So he's falling off the set, basically goes down the stairs. And he does the big dramatic death. Lights go down to black. I run to the back freaking out. I'm like in tears, like, holy shit, because it was so intense, really weird moment for me. And everybody on the cast ran up and said, oh, my God, that was amazing. That was so smart of you to do. And you figured that out, and it was great and fantastic. And I'm looking at all these people, little kid looking up going, holy shit, you're a bunch of crazy fucks. Because to me, it sucked. But every one of them loved it, and that's what they all live for, is those moments to improv, those moments to save a show, those moments of that energy. And I could dig it, but to me, it was a lot of responsibility. At that moment, when I decided, I'm going to the other side.
I want
to shoot it, direct it, light it, anything. But I don't want to
load the
guy.
Gun, yeah. But I'm not going to shoot the gun.
And ironically, there's still issues that go down on my side. But like, oh, shit, there's a hair in the gate or I'm out of focus. And then you get back and you're like, oh, shit. So things still get fucked. But anyway.
Of course.
It was a decision I made at that point to get out of that stuff. It just wasn't my bag. You know, I look back and I enjoyed that moment more now than I did at the time. So... You know, it was a good experience.
Excellent. So, is there anything you want to plug on my Brooklyn Buddha podcast?
You know, not this time, but there are a couple of projects I'd like to come back and talk to you about. There's some in development, as you know, you're involved with, and so is Tim.
He could be our first repeater.
Nice.
Repeater.
Right now, it's kind of triple secret.
But you've been working on a couple different shows. You just did Blunt Talk with Patrick Stewart.
I was a camera operator on that, so as an actor and an operator, don't tell your friends.
No. Who else? Or what other shows? You worked with my boy Omar Gooding, one of my first movies.
In fact, I'm going back there. I'm going. Family Time starts up in a little while here. Great show, great cast, really fun to work on. Really enjoy that. That starts up in a couple of weeks. I'm a camera operator on that show as well.
Yeah, make sure you tell Omar to call me. He hasn't. I don't think he checks his Facebook messages. He posts all the time.
Okay.
But so I'm watching. This is my new favorite show. Last night I watched the whole season, Big Time in Hollywood. Fucking hilarious. Yeah. Cuba Gooding's in it. And Omar plays his brother.
I saw it. Comedy Central, right?
Yeah, it's so really funny. You guys can't imagine. Oh, it's about Hollywood, Florida.
Yeah.
Oh, my.
And he goes into the, he has to go into rehab or something, and they're planning this whole thing.
Steven Tobolowsky. Nice. What a fucking hilarious.
You guys got to see it. It is funny.
It is really, really cool.
I don't know where I left off, but I
just... So you did Blunt Talk. Right. What else? Any other...
Family Time's coming back. That's on Bounce TV. Okay. You know,
It's a black network, Bounce TV.
Yeah, it's cool. It's a kind of cool vibe. It's their number one
show. Shout out to my African-American
audience. It's their number one show, if I recall. That's their number one show on Bounce right now. Omar, you know what's things cool about him? When we wrapped last season, such a cool guy. He had a box of really good cigars. I'm not a cigar aficionado or anything, mm-hmm. but he literally handed them out to all the crew. He's a very cool guy with the crew. You know, some actors don't ever talk to
him. You know, he never played poker before until he worked with me. When he worked with me, he said I'm one of the funniest guys he's ever worked with in his life. You know what I mean? Cool. So it was great. And I haven't seen him since, but I see he plays poker all the time now. I don't know if you talk to him about poker.
I will now.
Now, you're pretty... that's one thing... you're a pretty good poker player. Lots of times you're making the final table, or you're getting pretty close, or you're winning. As little kids with Senior Brown and all this and all the family, were you guys playing cards every Sunday dinner type thing?
Yes, we were. It's funny how we used to play. Texas Hold'em has taken over.
I hated Texas Hold'em.
Yeah.
I hated it. When my dad taught me, I was like, what the fuck? Give me some more cards.
Right.
I don't like these two. Give me... Draw two. hated it.
That's what we played. We played card draw.
Yeah.
We played seven card
stud. Sure.
It was whoever was dealing got to call the game.
Right.
And then we kind of transitioned more into a Texas Hold'em, and that's all we play now. No one wants to play the other games. I think Full Tilt Poker was a big part of that because when that had come out, we had all joined and we all had our own accounts and played a lot of Texas Hold'em. And I think everyone just kind of started liking that game better. But, yeah, basically 20 years of card playing with the family. In Vegas, I like to go to a table once in a while. And Commerce and bike sometimes.
Well, after we shoot this movie, we'll all go out. We'll go do something. I'll show you guys how to play craps.
Nice. I've done that once or twice.
Yeah, well, I know.
Craps is fun.
I know how to play really well. Tim's been there. We have to wrap this up in a little bit. Because you have to get to a big meeting for this new movie that you're pitching. So I want to, there's a couple things I like to ask my audience members. If there's a Facebook they can get a hold of you on, is there a website, is there anything?
There is, but I have to kind of hold back just a little bit.
Your own website. Doesn't have to be a project. Is there a joebarnes.com? No.
No, it's terrible. I know I should be more of a social media guy.
A lot of bad decisions this guy makes.
I know. It's a terrible excuse. I'm almost 50, and I do have a Facebook page, but I don't frequent it. So the problem is people try to contact or communicate, mm-hmm. and they get pissed off at me because it's a time thing. I can't sit there and chat and post. I wish I could, not right now anyway.
Understood.
You know, it's something I it's not like I want to ignore people, but unfortunately with the three kids and the work and everything else, it does take time from doing fun things like
meanwhile, all he does is messages me on Facebook all day, so he's fucking lying. Shh. All right, so
that's a secret.
Anyways, so being working like with James Cameron or anybody, any big directors you've worked with, if you're gone, like what's the longest you've been gone working on a shoot away from your wife?
A month.
Okay, so it's a month.
Yeah.
So it's a month of masturbating every night.
Yeah. Okay. Or cheap hookers.
Yeah, cheap hookers. So a lot of porn.
Per diem was pretty shitty.
Watching a lot of porn. In the room?
You know, they didn't have a lot of hotel porn.
They had tan water, but good porn.
Right.
That's all that matters. Exactly. At that hotel.
There was no time for masturbation. It was...
no time. No, there's always time.
Well, when your room, in the room, is 100 degrees, and outside it's 120, and the air conditioner's on, and you just want to sleep and escape the situation by sleeping. Masturbating wouldn't have been...
No, it feels good with soggy balls.
Get your...
It feels sexy with soggy balls.
Get your masturbation priorities straight.
You know, soggy you spoke balls, about... coffee earlier, and I wanted to tell you a quick coffee story, if that's all right.
Yeah. Well, we have a few minutes with you, so you can tell a coffee
When's
story.
When's your next guest coming, man?
Well, you said you had a run.
I
okay.
The coffee story.
Okay, tell the
story.
About the coffee. All right, story. You can tell his
it's
coffee
Cinco de
story.
Mayo.
But I want to do my couple things.
Okay, you can right. still do
whose show is this, mine?
Tell the coffee story.
Tell the fucking curly-headed Buddha?
What's this really funny?
Or the losing his hair Buddha or the Brooklyn Buddha? Now, tell your coffee story.
It's kind of funny because you're a New York guy and...
He is.
So tell me.
Perplexed by the black coffee. But anyway, you know, I've been. It's almost 30 years in this business in one fashion or another, and I'm talking about being a production assistant, video assist guy, camera assistant. Production whore is essentially what I go by because I'm a camera operator. I direct things, and yeah, not anything you've seen, so don't worry about that. but, you know, back in the late 80s, I was a production assistant, and I was doing live sports. And that was actually thanks to my dad, Phil, Senior Brown, had got me an interview to be a production assistant for NBC. So I was doing some NBC sports stuff. I don't really want to get into which one. Okay, it's baseball. So anyway, as a PA, what you do is you bring people things, coffee, drinks, lunch, whatever they need. You drive them places, you know, pretty much a gopher or a runner, also known as. But the director of a live TV broadcast said, hey, I need a coffee. So I was sent to get coffee. So growing up in a household that my father drank black coffee, I drank black coffee. And when you say coffee, it's black coffee to me, like in my world on mm-hmm. the West Coast, California. But evidently, this director's from New York. So I hand him his black coffee, and he literally turned around. And this is live television, so I get it's passionate, like I was explaining earlier.
Yeah.
But he literally turned around and chucked the coffee at me. So and said, I want cream and sugar. And I have black coffee on my clothing. And I looked around the video truck because they work out of a truck. And I looked around at all the faces, and everyone's mouths were wide open like, holy shit, did that just happen? Now, when I was 18, I was doing construction and different things. So I was built like a brick shit house, and I was ready to pummel this guy. I was literally going, you just threw shit at me, and you're a prick, and I'm going to punch you in the face. So part of me is going, I could end my career now forever and go to jail. Or I could put my head down, walk out, and go get him evidently New York coffee, which means cream and sugar. Okay, I don't know how many bags, if that means two or whatever, but obviously the producers and everyone ran up to me and said, oh God, we're so sorry, please, you know, understand it's live TV, blah, blah, blah. I didn't care about any of that. I was really pissed off. So anyway, you know, the next day, by the way, I never bought him his other cup. They had sent someone else in.
So but James Cameron threw a coffee on you. Is that what
exactly what I'm saying? No.
That's a callback.
Anyway, the bottom line is the next day when I went in the truck to bring someone else something, it was kind of a gag. Everyone had umbrellas.
Everybody had umbrellas.
They brought umbrellas in.
That
and
is
the deal.
Fucking a great story.
But the director never apologized to me, but everyone else did. So, and you know, man, it was my introduction into the business.
What was the director's name?
Lolito.
Is he since dead?
Yeah, I hope so.
It was a guy.
Prick.
Good.
New York,
so.
He's a New York prick dude, live TV. I don't know. I don't want to bury the guy, but he's a cocksucker.
So that's a great coffee story. So one thing I want to ask
you. So I'm just saying, all you PAs out there, make sure that if someone's asking for coffee, get the details, because otherwise they'll throw it at you.
Okay, good. In fact, call in or email us. at funnyjimmy@aol.com, your coffee store, and I will AOL. Talk about it.
They're going to come AOL. Your
I'm at AOL. Awesome. Come on. funnyjimmy@aol.com. Put in your...
call it now at funnyjimmy@aol.com.
AOL. Do you guys shut up? funnyjimmy@aol. And tell me your coffee story so I can...
phone lines are blowing up.
Tell you it on the story. Anyways. So, as I said, being on the road, masturbation, I joked about that. That's what I wanted to talk about before were fucking thrown to the coffee wolves.
Yeah, well,
let's talk about dicks.
So, porn.
I was douched with coffee.
So, what would your porn star name be if you had one?
That's a good question. Yes, it's everybody. I wish I would have known because I would have came up with something really awesome.
Well, you're going to come up with it right now, and it's going to be awesome because it's on my show.
All right. And it is an awesome show.
There's always the first pet's name and street name. First
street. That would never work for me. That would never work.
How about the first pet that you ran over on the street? How about that?
The first pet you ever filmed.
How about Joker Rod?
Joker Rod. Okay.
Joker anyway, that
you that's your name. That's your.
I'm so, not a huge porn guy. That's okay. I guess I should be. It seems really popular around here.
Now working.
Well, we are in the valley.
Working right. In the business. What would your man crush be of like? It's not a gay thing. It's your man crush in Hollywood that you rise to be.
This sounds funny. You know, Adam Carolla is to me, a really hardworking guy that has done really cool things with his life and his career. I dig him.
He's done whatever he wanted to.
Yeah, and it's fun because he and I have very similar outlooks. You know, I listen to his radio show forever, and once in a while I catch his podcast, but we have similar beliefs and things and how we look at politics. It's, my sister always says that we should be brothers because how we think alike and things. But
do you guys know each other?
I've met him. I have met him. I did he had a little funding deal for his movie.
Yeah. Adam, if you're listening, Joe Barnes, hit me at funnyjimmy@aol.com.
with your coffee store, your best coffee store,
and then I'll reintroduce you to Joe
Barnes.
It
was Road Hard, and my sister actually did this really cool thing where there's a funding level, I think
still
it was $350 bucks. Hard. Huh?
You still need to see
Yeah.
It. I loved Hammered.
Right, really good. The Hammer.
The Hammer.
Hammer is what we do on Cinco de Mayo.
Ayo.
The Hammer, really good movie. I mean, you know, I thought it was wonderful for what, you know, he had financially and, you know, it was his first deal and it was really good. But Road Hard, he had a funny thing. It was $350 bucks. My sister covered me and said, go check this out. It was fun. It was a barbecue. He spent some time with everybody, which was nice. Signed books and crap. He had a bunch of bitching cars.
So he paid $350 bucks to meet Adam Cole.
Yeah, to hang out. And like, nice. It's kind of nice of her to do just because, you know, she knows I'm a fan and I appreciate his work. Mm-hmm. You know, I know he's not the Brad Pitts of the world or anything, but he is a talented dude, and I dig his humor. I do.
Excellent. So your man crushes Adam Carolla. This is a fucking
first.
Well,
there's a Brad Pitt. There's a Brad
Pitt. No, Brad Pitt is. That's not yours. That's mine.
Oh, I'll tell you a Brad Pitt story.
It's very territorial.
I have a good Brad Pitt story.
You know Brad?
I don't. He wouldn't know me from Adam.
I think I just came in my pants a little bit.
I didn't meet him. We were at the MotoGP race at Laguna Seca. 2006, maybe 2007.
How much did it cost to meet him?
He was an R10, so. But because of one of my career paths, we had some kick-ass passes from Honda. So we were on turn four, and Brad does this thing, you know, when you're a Brad Pitt type guy, you get in the golf cart and you get to go wherever you want to watch the race. So he came to our tent, turn four, pretty cool area. And he shows up, and we're like going, fuck, Brad Pitt, pretty cool. So, you know, I went out to grab a beer, and I see him sitting at a table all by himself, and I was like, hey, I'm going to go over there. I said, hey, I just want to let you know it's really cool to meet you and stuff, and I shook his hand, and he's like, yeah, sit down, man. So he lights up a cigarette. He's like, yeah, so who do you have for the race? And just talk guy stuff for a minute. And I'm like, can I get this? I know it's weird, just a quick photo, because it'd be really awesome to show my wife, because she's in love with you. Yeah. It'd be kind of neat. Just
I always thing. Use the wife thing, too.
Yeah, it works. It works well.
Even
really,
before I had
that's one. Really just for me. It's in my spank bank. Yeah. That's an Adam Carolla thing. So, took the picture, and I said, hey, man, thanks a lot. I got split. So I go, my friend who took the picture, you know, he's seeing this, he's not hearing anything. He looked at me, he's like, what did you say to him? And I'm like, oh, just to grab a picture. He's like, no, what'd you say when you left? And I went, no, I just said, take it easy, thanks. He said, the look on his face was of pure shock. And it looked like he told him to get fucked because he was, I think in my own head, why he was shocked is I was probably the first guy ever to say, okay, see you later. I got to go. Because it was like,
he's right.
Probably used to people just hovering on him. And
oh, that's great.
You're boring, Brad. I got to go.
You're boring.
I gotta,
you're boring.
You see a man about a horse right? on the side of the potty.
I can't continue to look at your luxurious blonde hair right. and your perfect had, facial hair.
He was drinking coffee like he's going to throw it at me.
You like Tim's main crush should be Tom Selleck. They'd make a good couple.
Which Tom Selleck, though?
Well, that's great. That's a great story. I've had a great time, but there's one last thing I like to ask all my people. What is your favorite swear word, my friend?
Fuck.
Fuck.
I use it in so many ways.
We got twat last week.
Yeah, we got twat last week. A lot of people use fuck. So
people really use twat.
So use...
He did. He said it a few times. It was impressive.
Interesting.
So use fuck to James Cameron 5 times if you could. Doesn't have to be mean. No, it can be anyway.
You should say, use fuck to the...
Coffee.
Fuck the coffee. Fuck to the coffee guy?
Oh, my fucking God. What?
Say what you've been waiting to say to the
coffee
guy.
Say it to the coffee guy.
Fuck you, you fucking cocksucker. Fuck off. Fuck your mother. Don't stop. And stop fucking throwing coffee on kids. I was a fucking 18-year-old little punk, and you threw coffee on me, you bitch. Fuck off.
You've got fucking coffee PTSD. I do. All right, buddy.
Anytime a cup's poured.
Thanks, bro.
Joe Barnes, thanks a lot. Thanks, we'll see you next time in the Brooklyn Buddha Podcast. Tim, say goodbye.
Goodbye. Thank you.
Woody.
Adios.
We'll see you next
Hasta
time.
Hasta la vista.
Thank you, buddy.
Thank you.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Wait a minute. Wait a minute. You ain't heard nothing yet.
Houston, we have a problem.
They're here.
Stop, children. What's that sound? Everybody.